जनरंजना यमुना तेरा वन चारे जय राधा माधव कुंज विहारी। जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तर शतश्री श्रीमद्दिस डिवाइन ग्रेस इसी भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी शिल प्रभुपाद की जय। अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की जय। ग्रंथराज श्रीमद् भागवतम की जय। ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज, ऑल ग्लोरीज टू श्री श्री गुरु एंड गौरंगा। नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत्। नष्टप्रायेषु भद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवती उत्तम श्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिके। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 7 चैप्टर 13 टेक्स्ट 9 एंड 10। नयतेर आश्रमः प्रायो धर्महेतुर्महात्मनः शान्तस्य समचित्तस्य बिभ्र्याद् उत वा त्यजेत्। नयते राश्रम प्रायो धर्म हेतुर महात्मनः शांतस्य समचित्तस्य बिब्रुयादुतवा त्यजेत्। Not yatehe of the sannyasi ashramaha, the symbolic dress with danda and kamandalu, prayaha, almost always, dharma hetu, the cause of advancement in spiritual life. Mahaatmanaha, who is factually exalted and advanced. Shantasya, who is peaceful. Samachittasya, who has attained the stage of being equipoised. Bibhryat, one may accept such symbolic signs. Uta, indeed. Va, or Tyajet, one may give up. So I'm supposed to read 9 and 10 today. 10 is a very short purport, but we'll go through it. A peaceful, equipoised person who is factually advanced in spiritual consciousness does not need to accept the symbols of a sannyasi, such as the tridanda and the kamandalu. According to necessity, he may sometimes accept those symbols and sometimes reject them. Purport. There are four stages of renounced order of life, Kutichaka, Bahudaka, Parivrajaka Acharya, and Paramahamsa. Herein, Srimad Bhagavatam considers the Paramahamsas among the sannyasis. The Mayavadi impersonalist sannyasis cannot attain the Paramahamsa stage. This is because of their impersonal conception of the Absolute Truth, Brahmeti Paramatmeti Bhagavaniti Shabdyate. The Absolute Truth is perceived in three stages, of which Bhagavan, or realization of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is meant for the Paramahamsas. Indeed, Srimad Bhagavatam itself is meant for the Paramahamsa, Paramo Nirmatsaranam Satam. Unless one is in the Paramahamsa stage, he is not eligible to understand the Srimad Bhagavatam. For Paramahamsas or sannyasis in the Vaishnava order, preaching is the first duty. To preach, such sannyasis may accept the symbols of a sannyas, such as the danda and kamandalu, or sometimes they may not. Generally, the Vaishnava sannyasis, being Paramahamsas, are automatically called Babajis, and they do not carry a kamandalu or danda. Such a sannyasi is free to accept or reject the marks of a sannyasi. His only thought is, where is there an opportunity to spread Krishna consciousness? Sometimes the Krishna consciousness movement sends its representative sannyasis to foreign countries where the danda and kamandalu are not very much appreciated. We send our preachers in ordinary dress to introduce our books and philosophy. Our only concern is to attract people to Krishna consciousness. We may do this in the dress of sannyasis or in the regular dress of gentlemen. Our only concern is to spread interest in Krishna consciousness. Text 10. Although a saintly person may not expose himself to the vision of human society, by his behavior his purpose is disclosed. To human society he should present himself like a restless child, and although he is the greatest thoughtful orator, he should present himself like a dumb man. Purport. A great personality very much advanced in Krishna consciousness may not expose himself by the signs of a sannyasi. To cover himself, he may live like a restless child or a dumb person, although he is the greatest orator or poet. Om Ajnanatimirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chaksurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadavahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gora Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So in these two purports there are guess, three main points. The first one is that a sannyasi is not bound to carry the symbols of a sannyasi. Because he may give them up for the sake of preaching Krishna consciousness, depending on the circumstance. So for a sannyasi, it is very important to always carry a tridanda and a water pot, kamandalu. And that's what opens the opportunities for them to speak Krishna consciousness. However, in some places, if the danda and the water pot close the opportunities for Krishna consciousness, then they are okay to give those things up to not risk or to not lose the opportunity of preaching Krishna consciousness. So what's important is that the symbols are what's called the form, and preaching of Krishna consciousness is called the substance. So it's always important to maintain substance, and sometimes form may change. However, those who are governed by rules only, they sometimes fall in the trap of following the form and giving up the substance. As they say, throwing the baby out with the bath water. So substance is more important. So that's the first point. Second point is that a sannyasi's concern is always about preaching Krishna consciousness. And the Bhagavatam is a scripture for the Paramahamsas. And the third point is, even though a Vaishnava, a devotee, may be very, very qualified, as soon as he or she may open their mouth and reveal pearls of knowledge and wisdom, in the world in general, they behave as if they're dumb or that they don't know much. They're childlike. Not childish, but childlike. So that's the third point. So let's go to the second point first. Prabhupada begins the purport with the four types of sannyasis. Kutichaka, Bahudaka, Parivrajakacharya, and Paramahamsa. So from Vanaprastha, when a person is moving into sannyas, the social system allows for easing into that ashram. It's not like overnight. Of course, there are some persons who can, and they do. But for others, there is a small incremental easing into sannyas ashram. So first is the Kutichaka. Kutichaka basically means that this sannyasi, he gives up living with the family. So lives by himself outside the village or town, not into the forest and traveling yet, lives separately. And his son brings a little prasad for him to eat once a day. So the previous family takes care of him in terms of his food. The wife never brings the food for him. It's the son. This way, he is disconnected from his family in its daily routine, and disconnected from the family in its daily things to do, but at the same time is not fully let all by himself to figure out life, sannyas life. So that's the, it's the easing away. It's a little step away from family life into sannyas life. And people come to where he is, and he speaks Krishna consciousness to them. That's the Kutichaka. The next is the Bahudaka. The Bahudaka is similar, except now prasad doesn't come from the home. Prasad comes from the rest of the community. If they want to offer him something to eat, then he gets to eat. But he still lives within the village or town precincts and preaches to that community. So now this is another step. Now he's not dependent on his previous family, but he's dependent on the broader family, if you will, or the broader community. The third stage is called Parivrajakacharya. Parivraja means to move about. And Acharya is that he sets the example of proper behavior by traveling and speaking about Krishna. So now he has no connection with his previous family. He travels non-stop here and there to different places without worry or fear about what will I eat, where will I sleep. All those concerns are not part of his consideration. He goes out into land and areas that have not been tapped before, and it's all about adventure with Krishna, adventure in preaching Krishna consciousness. That's Parivrajakacharya. And Paramahamsa is pretty much actually not even within the sannyas order, but Prabhupada writes here. Here in Srimad Bhagavatam considers the Paramahamsas among the sannyasis. So the Paramahamsas are so disconnected from the world in a way that they're only fully absorbed in their own cultivation and perfection of Krishna consciousness. They are way above any social order. They're not obliged by anything in this world. They don't have to follow any social or cultural norms or rules, nothing. They just live in deeply absorbed in their own bhajan. The reason they are called Paramahamsa is because the word hamsa is a swan, mostly translated as a swan, but apparently it's a particular type of duck. But anyway, swan. Swans have a particular ability that other birds don't have, is that if they're given a mixture of milk and water, the swan can extract milk and leave behind the water. It has that ability. So these swans don't live in India too long because there is no milk. There's mostly water or white colored liquid. But that's their ability. So a hamsa is that bird that knows how to extract the essence. And so paramahamsas are those personalities that in any circumstance of life, they know to extract the essence of Krishna consciousness. So they see every situation as, what is Krishna trying to teach me here? Or how best may I manifest Krishna's will in this circumstance? This is a Paramahamsa. Most of us, we get disturbed by a particular situation and we go on a spin. And that spin takes for some few days, for some a few months, for some a few years, for some a few lifetimes. But still it is not, we miss the essence of what the situation is. What is Krishna's will in this circumstance becomes unclear. Because we are not Paramahamsas, I am Paramakamsa. So, Paramahamsas are these persons who can extract whatever kind of situation they may be in, the perfection of Krishna consciousness. They're completely in tune with Krishna. So as I'm speaking about this, I was also reminded that yesterday was a very auspicious day. It was called Vasanta Panchami. It's the fifth day in the spring season. It's the day of appearance of Raghunath Das Goswami, Pundarika Vidyanidhi, Sri Vishnu Priya Devi, and the disappearance day of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. So these are all fantastic personalities. And I don't know if I can cover everything about it, because I don't know everything about them, but a few things that are in relevance to the purports here. Pundarik Vidyanidhi, he is the spiritual master of Gadadhar Pandit, who appears in our Panchatattva Mantra, Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Advaita, Gadadhar, and then there is Srivas. So Gadadhar is considered to be Radharani. And Radharani's father is Vrishabhanu. So just as Vrishabhanu appears as Radharani's father in Krishna Leela, he appears in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes as Pundarik Vidyanidhi, the father of Srimati Radharani. And since Gadadhar Pandit is Radharani, he becomes the spiritual master of Gadadhar Pandit. So Pundarik Vidyanidhi comes from a very highly an exalted Brahmin family, but also very, very rich. And is so rich that most persons would consider him as a materialist. That's the next verse, that he lived like a materialist in this world, but deep within was his highest exalted Krishna consciousness. So once Mukunda, he takes Gadadhar Pandit to meet Pundarik Vidyanidhi. Now Gadadhar is a brahmachari wearing saffron cloth, and he was a little awkward, he was feeling awkward. Why am I in Pundarik Vidyanidhi's house? And when he saw Pundarik Vidyanidhi for the first time, he was taken aback. This man had gelled his hair. It was nicely combed. He was wearing silk robes. And he was sitting on fantastic upholstery. And he had servants bringing him varieties of drinks, non-alcoholic beverages, to be specific. And his whole house was full of fancy furniture and all the entrapments of a very, very rich man. And he seemed to live the lavish life. So Gadadhar Pandit, in his heart, felt a little judgmental. Ooh, what kind of a man is this? And why did Mukunda bring me here? I'm a renunciate. What am I doing in the house of a materialist? And when Mukunda saw Gadadhar's face, he understood what was going on inside his mind. And so Mukunda recited two verses from Srimad Bhagavatam. Both are about Putana, but the one is from the third canto and the other is from the tenth canto. And the third canto one is that famous Aho Bakiyam Stanakala Kutam Jigam Saya Yat Apayayad Api Asadhvi Lebe Gatim Dhatri Muchitam Tatonyam Kamva Dayalum Sharanam Vrajema. This is spoken by Uddhava. He says, how can I surrender myself to anyone other than this wonderful Krishna who gave the witch Putana, who had smeared her breast with poison just to kill him. And when she approached him, because she approached him as hidden in the form of a mother, although with the very clear intention to kill him, but because she came as a mother, he accepted her and gave her for eternity the position of a mother in the spiritual world. And so when these verses were recited, Pundarik Vidyanidhi went into this super ecstasy. And he rolled on the floor, he started swooning, he started tearing his clothes off and went into this very unimaginable and inexplicable stroke of ecstasy, thinking about Krishna. So Gadadhar Pandit became shocked. Oh my gosh, hidden inside is this fascinating personality But I've committed such a grave offense. So how to repair that offense? And the best way to repair that was to fall at Pundarika Vidyanidhi's feet and beg from him, please accept me as your disciple. This is the most befitting situation for me. So Radharani got united with Vrishabhanu again in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. So Pundarika Vidyanidhi was so close to Lord Chaitanya that whenever he would come to Jagannath Puri, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would get up, run to him, embrace him and say, my father is here, my father is here. So Vrishabhanu, who is the father of Radharani, is like a father to Krishna. And of course Lord Chaitanya is in the mood of Srimati Radharani. So in that sense, it is proper that he calls him father. So this is about being hidden and about Paramahamsas, who Bhagavatam brings out their inner Krishna consciousness fully for such personalities. So then the next part of the purport is about whether or not to carry the symbols or signs of a sannyasi. So Srila Prabhupada says that one should, and in the case of certain places where there's not the same kind of welcoming for a sannyasi, then the sannyasi need not be in his dress, sannyas dress. So there are places on this planet, even today, that the devotees will go wearing pants and t-shirt. The sannyasis who wear saffron cloth will wear pants and t-shirts and enter these areas to preach Krishna consciousness. So there are many countries in this world which are, of another religion, and they are not very welcoming of devotees, especially the Muslim countries or the communist countries. And so then, it's Grace Purnendu Prabhu and Anusuya Mataji. Welcome. Nice. And Gopika Mataji. Nice to see you. They're from Milwaukee, Minnesota, Minneapolis. So, so then they go in incognito to preach Krishna consciousness, so especially the Middle East and all that. Because what is more important is preaching of Krishna consciousness and not the dress itself. So there are many such pastimes of His Holiness Bhakti Tirtha Swami entering Africa and wearing the robes of the tribal kings in Africa, or many of our sannyasis entering the Middle East, in fact even other parts of the communist world, and preaching Krishna consciousness incognito, in hiding. It's very risky. But preaching Krishna consciousness is worth the risk. Because Prabhupada writes in this purport like about four times, our only concern is to attract people to Krishna consciousness. Our only concern is to spread interest in Krishna consciousness. And so one has to take that risk. And Prabhupada took that risk, and Prabhupada's disciples took that risk. And he also gave them such challenges. So a couple of anecdotes. Once Brahmananda Swami and Gargamuni Swami at that time, they were sent by Prabhupada to Pakistan, which is a Muslim country, to preach Krishna consciousness. Of course, they were in their sannyas dress, but it's that time when India had declared war with Bangladesh and all that. So the situation was very heightened. And it so happened that Prabhupada sent them a message, come back immediately to India, because for their safety. So when they were trying to get out of Pakistan, near the border, the security guards, the army, stopped the bus and got everyone down. And those that were not Muslims, they were ready to kill. So they were on gunpoint. And Brahmananda Swami turns to another devotee, I think Gargamuni Swami, and says, put your hand in your bead bag, we're going back to Godhead. That was the courage with which they were preaching. Of course, nothing happened to them. They were let go. And they came back safely to India. And as soon as Prabhupada saw them, he embraced them and started crying because they had taken such kind of risk on his behalf. Etc. And there are many, many, many such pastimes. Then, the other part of the purport is Prabhupada's writing that the great personality very much advanced in Krishna consciousness may not expose himself by the signs of a sannyasi. So there Krishna consciousness, he says, to cover himself he may live like a restless child or a dumb person, although he is the greatest orator or poet. So a devotee is not an exhibitionist. In fact, a fool is an exhibitionist because there is not enough substance inside. He or she has to put it out for the world to recognize. But a true saint is one who holds his or her Krishna consciousness internal and doesn't have to be exhibited for everyone. And when the circumstances justify the need for such exposure, they will do so. So because we are followers of Lord Chaitanya, he has set wonderful examples for us in different circumstances of how to be so. First is when he was in when he came to Jagannath Puri, he was found in an unconscious, deeply ecstatic state by the guards in Jagannath Puri. So Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, who was the chief priest, he said, bring this young man to my house. He looks like a young sannyasi, maybe he's tired. And then he put a little cotton swab and then figured out that, no, there's more to this than what meets the eye. He's in a very highly exalted state of ecstasy. And then, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to external consciousness, of course I'm abridging the entire pastime, he told him, you're a young boy, you look very handsome, and you need to protect yourself as you travel here and there. And so you need to deeply study Vedanta. I will teach you Vedanta. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was like a grandson to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. So he said, yeah, okay, no problem. I'll hear what you have to say. So Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya spoke for 7 days on Vedanta, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu sat at a lower level than Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and heard him for 7 days without speaking a word. I mean, I always wonder why it took Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya 7 days to figure out that this person was not speaking anything. But anyway, that's, I think, the Lord's very special power of, I guess, incomprehension upon Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. That after 7 days, he asked him, you haven't spoken a word, you haven't agreed, you haven't disagreed, you have not asked a question. Are you understanding what I'm saying? So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's answer was the most heart-shattering answer for a person of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's caliber. And he said, as far as Vedanta is concerned, I understand it thoroughly. But your explanation, I don't understand because it's like a cloud in front of the sun. You're distorting the meanings of what the Vedanta is. Imagine saying that, to go to Albert Einstein, I don't know, to say, you don't know what you're talking about. It's the most insulting, heart-shattering comment. So for Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he was so taken aback. But the example here is that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did not tell him day one, oh old man, I'll tell you what Vedanta is all about. He kept it internal. And at the right moment, when it was needed, he spoke it. And then in Varanasi, in Kashi, when he was invited to meet with Prakashananda Saraswati and his 60,000 disciples, and they all invited him and they were all sitting on a high seat, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went and sat where people washed their feet. And Prakashananda Saraswati walked up to him and said, "Oh, no, no, no. This is not a place befitting for you, befitting you. You should come sit with us." And gave his, extended his arm and hand and picked him up and brought him. And there also Chaitanya Mahaprabhu kept silent. Only when particularly asked, "Why you don't study Vedanta with us versus like a child or in a, like a sentimentalist, you're dancing in the streets?" That's when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu spoke. So in most cases, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and all of his other followers kept their identity or their wisdom hidden and not exhibited unless it was required. Then we hear in the Bhagavatam, when Maharaj Rahugana met Jadabharat, the fifth canto. Jadabharat was behaving like a mad person. He had never spoken in his entire life until then. And when he was asked to do one thing after another, he did everything in reverse, almost as if he was an imbecile or he was you know, he was mad or crazy. Until the point when he met Maharaj Rahugana and he was asked by King Rahugana's servants to become one of the palanquin carriers because he was seemingly very muscular and looked like a good for nothing anyway. So they asked him, "Hey, do some useful thing, come here." So when he carried the palanquin, and the king was sitting in it, it's described that the street had some ants. So Jadabharat tried to sidestep the ants. And so naturally, the ride was not smooth for the king. The palanquin was a little rocky. So he said, "Who are you, you imbecile man? You don't know how to carry a palanquin properly? You're good for nothing? And next time you don't walk properly, I'm going to whip you with my stick." And this first time in his life, Jadabharat spoke back and he spoke to the king asking, "Who are you going to beat? Is it the body or is it the soul? And what is it that's the difference between you and me? Because you're a king and I'm in this body, as a soul there is no that distinction." And when Rahugana heard these words from Jadabharat, he was so taken aback that he was completely humiliated in a moment. That the only thing he could think of that was befitting was to get down and fall at Jadabharat's feet and say, "Oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't understand who you are. You're a very great person. Please instruct me." And there's a whole conversation between the two. Even in Adi Shankaracharya's life, there's an instance like that. Once Adi Shankaracharya was walking with all his disciples, and on his path came a chandala. A chandala is like an untouchable lower dog eater, Prabhupada says. And he had all these dogs with him. And he came on his path. So Shankaracharya stopped in his tracks and he asked that untouchable, "Please step aside so we may pass through, so we don't accidentally touch you and become contaminated. Please step aside." So the chandala asked him, "Who are you asking to step aside? Are you asking the body to step aside or the soul? And to the body, it anyway mixes into the elements, so there is nothing touchable and untouchable. And as far as the soul, it is pure spirit, Satchidananda Brahman. So how is it contaminated? So which contaminated piece are you asking to step aside? And for that moment, Shankaracharya was caught off guard in that sense. And he said, oh, this Chandala is not an ordinary person. He actually offered obeisances to the Chandala. And it was revealed that he was Lord Shiva, who had come to test him and then glorify him. So like this, just because somebody may appear in a particular way, it is, one should be careful, that's to not judge by externals. Now, sometimes some people are crazy and they may have to be, dealt with in a particular way, respectfully though, in a particular way. But within each person is the soul, and the life of a devotee is to honor that soul. However the expression might be, it's not necessarily that everyone is honored on a high seat, but they're honored with respect, but dealt with accordingly, according to their circumstance. But here the message for us is that our Krishna consciousness is not meant for exhibitionism. It is meant for cultivating our relationship with Krishna. And so here particularly he says, the sannyasi represents himself or presents himself like a restless child or a dumb man until or unless the situation is such that they have to teach Krishna consciousness. They don't go out and say, here I am, the greatest preacher in the land, come, hear from me. No such exhibition. In fact, they don't even need that. They are recognized by their presence. And those who are spiritually awake will recognize that person. And those who are spiritually asleep will anyway not recognize. And so it doesn't matter to them. Those are some thoughts. Any questions or comments? Would like to add something? Yes, Ru. Subal Ru.
From what we read before, turn it down. That turn. We read before on the Vanaprastha. It looks like, you know, from the descriptions, that the austerities of the Vanaprasthas are more severe than the austerities of the initial stages of sannyas, both, you know, the Kutichak and the Bahudaka. So one may think, you know, that it's incremental, you know, the type of, but the austerities that are described on the Vanaprastha were pretty intense,
right?
In comparison, I mean, it's almost like, you know, let me, you know, hurry.
I prefer to take sannyas than Vanaprastha.
Yeah. Yeah, so you know, the just the fact example that the Vanaprastha couldn't have cooked food. Oh. It's just, you know, collecting grains and roots and eat that, and the sannyas is getting, you know, some the nice prasadam from the family and from the, sure, you know, like that. So maybe you can comment on that if you hear.
I also thought about it. my appreciation of right or wrong, his appreciation is that Vanaprastha is like the stage between grihastha and sannyas. And it's the intermediary stage. So within grihastha life, one has the opportunity for a lot of comfort, sense gratification, etc. There's the security of a home, the convenience of a vehicle, the opportunity for nicely prepared meals, varieties by you know, different cuisine, Italian, American, continental, the whole nicely cooked, spiced well, you know, the whole thing. Because he or she has the wherewithal and the resources for it. But if the purpose of life is to become sannyas, then there has to be something to extricate, to separate the person from that kind of lifestyle. So the vanaprastha stage is very intense. It prepares the person for a life of sannyasi. Sannyasi is out in the world without any sense of security, nothing. In Bhagavad Gita chapter 10, when Krishna describes, before the Chaturshloki, he describes the different qualities that come from him. And he talks about abhayam in it. And also in the 16th chapter when he says abhayam sattva santushtam. Prabhupada describes abhayam specifically with life of a sannyasi, a fearlessness. And if sannyasi is fearless, is because they're very aware and in tune with the Paramatma in the heart. So they never feel alone. Fear comes from a sense of feeling alone, or the sense of darkness, alone and uncertain. So for a sannyasi, the idea is that they are all, they're courageous and they're not scared or fearful, is because they're not alone and that they always have Paramatma security with them. And whatever is certain is that Paramatma is always there for them. So I find that the vanaprastha stage sometimes is very intense as a way to remove the person from grahastha indulgence into a life of service of preaching. So no cooked food, collect grains from the fire sacrifice, things like that. Sleep on this floor. The sannyasis are also like that. In our movement, sometimes it's we think wrongly, or perhaps it seems like, oh, they're living the high life. Not necessarily. It's not necessarily like they're living the tough life. It is an opportunity for the grahasthas to offer some service to them. And so in fact, when they eat rich food, it's more difficult for them than it is to eat simply. I've seen in some places, the sannyasi goes and varieties of people cook, and they all want to offer the sannyasi to eat. And different, there's a whole grade of consciousness in it. It has the grades of spices, it has all this, and they have to eat this mixed with that, and they have to eat everything, because if they eat this and don't eat that, then this Prabhu is happy and that Prabhu may be upset or disappointed. Or, you know, the whole complex thing in it. And they have to eat happily. And I'm sure it has some bearing on their body. But that's the austerity they take up. It's not easy. And every day a different hand is cooking, you know. It's very difficult.
We're just thinking of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, those 10 years that he spent performing these severe austerities to basically prepare himself to take sannyas and, you know, start this very, very powerful preaching program. And so the sannyasi is a preacher. But you really, as you pointed out, you have to basically extract all attachments and you know, really, it was explaining part of the vanaprastha goal is that you come to that stage of Brahma Buddha, that, you know, you're a spirit soul. Now you're fully realized on that.
Right.
And then, you know, you go and preach.
Yesterday was the appearance day of Vishnu Priya Devi as well, the consort of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And so, her austerity is also described as something unimaginable. When Lord Chaitanya left and took sannyas, she was in such a state of separation from him that it seems she would cry all day feeling separation from Lord Chaitanya. And she completely hid herself from all public. No one would get to see her except Srivas would come and once in a while, but most of them would only see her feet. No one saw her face, no one saw her at all. She just lived and served Mother Sachi. And all she would eat is described that she would have two pots, one filled with uncooked rice and the other empty. She would chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, and for every mantra, she would pick a rice grain. And from morning to 3 o'clock, she would chant. So whatever rice she had collected in that, that's what she would cook and eat. So it's described that how many rounds Chaitanya Mahaprabhu chanted, no one knew, because he was always chanting. Similarly, Vishnu Priya was always chanting. They never knew how many rounds. She was hundreds and hundreds of rounds and eating only rice grain with every Maha Mantra picked up. And she would offer to her deity of Lord Chaitanya. She was the first one to introduce the deity of Gaura. And what's touching is that the devotees describe why Vishnu Priya did this kind of austerity. One of the inspirations was when Lord Ramachandra was performing his pastimes and he had sent Sita away to live in Valmiki's house. So he was experiencing the pastimes of separation from Sita Devi for many thousands of years. And because he had taken the promise of monogamy, he had a deity of Sita, golden deity of Sita next to him so that he can perform all the yajnas as a king. But he never married another wife. So as a token of reciprocation, it is described that Sita Devi, in the incarnation of Vishnu Priya, did the same thing. For a very long time, she had the deity of Gaura with her, and she would only offer to him and live with the deity of Gaura as a reciprocation for Lord Ramachandra's. The way he lived alone in separation from her, she did the same back in reciprocation. That was very sweet then. But her austerity is unmatchable. Okay, anything else? Purnendra Prabhu, Mataji? Okay. Oh, you have a question? Please. We have a mic for you.
Yeah, only I should, maybe a small question. Yeah. When we say that the sannyasi is not a sannyasi, if it is not connected to his sannyasi's target is not Krishna, right?
Say it again. When we say a sannyasi is not a sannyasi,
if his target is not Krishna, means his goal is not to achieve the Krishna.
No, we didn't say that.
Okay. But here, what happens sometimes that the people appears to be sannyasi, like they behave like a sannyasi. They stay away, they follow this thing. So how to identify that he is actually a sannyasi, which is actually meant to be? Although he follows certain principles, okay? But sometimes it finds after a long time looking into his behavior and other, he finds deviated from the actual goal.
So there you go. That's the indication already.
Okay.
If someone seems to have deviated from the path of knowing the absolute truth, then it will show.
Okay, so how such sannyasis should protect themselves?
How should a sannyasi protect themselves? Well, one is the sannyasi should always constantly preach.
Okay.
Have their own practices that are very strong and maintain association of other sannyasis. Minimally. They should always have association of other sannyasis. Should never think, I don't need association. tools. Mm-hmm. Life should only be about preaching.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Third, their own practices.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Bhoga for Kishore Kishori is here. So the devotees need some help to transfer from the truck down to the kitchen. Thank you. Hare Krishna.